Welcome back to Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar with its Award of Excellence. And coming to you from the law offices of Santucci Priori, PL, practicing intellectual property, business and entertainment law and litigation. They are located in downtown Fort Lauderdale and can be reached at 500law.com or call 954-351-7474. If you'd like to contact the legal panel hosts and guest, go to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back from our short recess. I'm Philip Bell, along with Gary Singer and Mike Santucci. You know, medical malpractice is a serious thing, and we don't take this pretty lightly at all on our program. From the law offices of Mark A. Glassman is Mark Glassman. And Mark Glassman worked on both sides of the fence. What I mean, he also represented the insurance companies for many years when it came to medical malpractice, and now he's in private practice. And as a matter of fact, I'm giving an endorsement that I never do. I'm so impressed with him, I even forwarded him a friend of mine who had a issue with a friend who had an accident, and hopefully it's something that he can help with. But, you know, common forms of dental malpractice include wrongful administered anesthesia, infections caused by improperly sterilized dental equipment, and even failure to diagnose and treat periodontal disease. First of all, good evening, Mark Glassman.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. And, Phil, thank you for the referral this afternoon.
You're welcome. You deserve it. And, you know, the thing I really like about your firm is the size. It's a boutique firm. You know, you don't push your clients off to another attorney or a paralegal assistant and everything else. You know, Mark, that's the practice of law because you care about your clients and you understand what they go through. Dental malpractice is just part about what you do. You do all full personal injury, but dental malpractice is part of your practice. And it's amazing to me the information. As I said, 13% of all malpractice claims are dental in nature. And I find, according to my research, a lot of them don't even want to settle because they don't want to, you know, agree that they did wrong as well.
You know, Phil, I'm very excited to hear about dental malpractice as well, but I understand you're a bit of a renowned expert on chorea equina syndrome. Was I even close, or did I fill it up?
You're close. It's called cauda equina syndrome. Cauda equina means the hair of the horse.
Ah.
So it really refers to a set of nerve endings that run through the spine towards your trunk and waist. And really the issue there is that if you herniate a disc, a lumbar disc, that disc can push into the nerve endings. Should that happen, you then have severe neurologic deficits, primarily incontinence would be one of those,
okay.
The issue. If that happens, you have 48 hours to get that disc off that nerve, a decompression surgery, or else your neurologic symptoms, whatever they may be, and there could be a host of them, will likely become permanent.
Is it pretty much always accompanied by incontinence?
That's the hallmark, the red flag that goes up in the emergency rooms, and that's why when people go into ERs, if you've ever seen an ER face sheet, one of the standard questions is, do you have back pain? Do you have loss or bowel or bladder problems? And that's the reason why.
So if they don't fix it within that key 48 hours, it doesn't go away.
That's it. It's a 48-hour window to get a decompression surgery.
Wow, and then that would be considered malpractice sometimes.
Most of the time, yes.
Okay, and how do you play into that? I understand you do a lot of traveling with that. And
I started with some of these cases about 10 years ago, and I happened to meet a guy by the name of John Kostwick, and Dr. Kostwick is a renowned surgeon out of Johns Hopkins. I had my first case with him. He was our expert. And through him, I learned a lot about about cauda equina, and out of that grew a practice. And I started getting calls from as far away as Portland, L.A., Indiana, Georgia, and even New York. And I've taken on cases, and I've had to travel and work on cases in those jurisdictions. And I find local counsel to sponsor me, Pro Hoc Vitae, mm-hmm. and I get in there and I work on those cases.
Is this a fairly common type of malpractice?
It's very uncommon.
Okay.
And I'll just real briefly say there was a case out in Portland I had a couple of years ago. They had shopped it to 10 law firms in the Portland area. none of the law firms wanted to touch it because they didn't know anything about it. They found me on the internet. I took the case. We ended up resolving the case within a 12-month period.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. I'm sure you have, area-specific experts too. That you must know a bunch of expert witnesses or potential experts in dental.
Absolutely. More importantly than knowing the experts in the field of dental, my partner. His name is Dr. Stanley Lane. He is he's a board certified oral surgeon. He is a former head of surgery, of oral surgery at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. He retired from the practice of medicine back in the 90s, went to law school, became an attorney, and now he exclusively practices in dental malpractice
dental
cases.
Dental in particular.
And he's my partner, and so he provides the medical side of the cases, the medical side of the work of the cases, and I do most of the legal, mm-hmm. and I've learned a lot from him from being associated with him over the years.
Mm-hmm. Are there the same sorts of prerequisites to suit for dental malpractice as there would be for other forms of medical malpractice?
Yeah, and most people don't understand that, and that is that dental malpractice cases are medical malpractice cases. So they are subject to the same rules and regulations, and a lot of people who know anything about medical malpractice, we call them the pre-suit regulations. Mm-hmm. And so these cases have to go through all of the prerequisites, same thing that a medical case will. Mm-hmm. That's sort of why dental malpractice is a little bit of a stepchild of the medical malpractice world, because most people don't realize that these are real serious cases that have real damages and have real value. The other side of it is, as many people know, medical cases, they're quite expensive to work up. Mm-hmm. So as a law firm, you have to sort of work that balance. Are the damages sufficient enough to take it? Because you're going to have to put a sufficient amount of capital into the case to get the result.
But if you could prove a dentist was negligent, but you weren't seriously injured. Myself, he cut the inside of my cheek. And damn, I was miserable. If I drank something with an orange juice, I would scream. Can I still file a malpractice claim because he cut my side of my mouth?
Absolutely, you could, but would you want to is the question. And really that comes back to the costs associated with filing and pursuing a medical malpractice claim, a dental malpractice claim. Mm-hmm. If you have an injury that is not a significant injury, the cut you reference in your mouth, mm-hmm. that cut will heal, that cut will go away, even though it may have been as a result of a negligent action by the dentist, the value in your damages aren't sufficient damages there to justify the significant capital it will take to prove that, because you have, in medical cases, a lot of hoops you have to jump through.
Well, you know, you asked me not to mention the amount, even though it's out there and so forth, but you had an interesting case from a 92-year-old man who underwent dental work. During the procedure, the dentist dropped a dental tool down his throat?
It didn't just happen once. What makes that case so interesting is that this was a 92-year-old man who went in to try and get dental implants. And so you start off with the joke of a 92-year-old man getting dental implants. But the really interesting part of it is that in the fitting of the implants in the first session, the dentist dropped the cap down the patient's throat. He was fortunate that the cap went down his system, and they were able to rush him to the hospital. He ended up getting a colonoscopy, and they were able to find the cap and remove it. This 92-year-old man thought highly of his dentist, so went back to him for a second try, figuring everybody makes a mistake, and I'm not going to hold it against him. And in that second visit, when they were fitting the permanent cap on the implant, he didn't drop the cap down his throat, but he dropped what's called a torque wrench down the patient's throat.
Oh, my God.
This torque wrench didn't go down through his system. Instead, this time, it went and was called what's called aspiration. It went into his lungs, and it got stuck in there. So what had to have happened is that he went to the hospital. They tried to fish it out orally. They could not get to it. This gentleman, because of his age and because that now torque wrench was in his lung, was interfering with his ability to breathe. They ended up removing a part of a lobe of his lung because the tool was in there. Unfortunately, because he was 92 years old, he did not survive because of he had respiratory insufficiency.
So how can you, if he's not alive, how can you go after the dentist?
Well, you file what's called a wrongful death case, and it's a wrongful death case that arises out of medical negligence.
Ah.
There are a whole bunch of subplots when you get into that area, but what we did in that case, because he was not survived by a spouse and he was not survived by a child who was 26 years or younger, we couldn't file a traditional wrongful death case. What we filed was a pain and suffering case, which we call, or lawyers would call, a survival action. And that case sought his pain and suffering from the time of the incident, the time that the torque wrench was dropped down his throat, to the time of his death. In that case, it was a four-month period of agony, and that was the case that we pursued against the dentist.
With respect to statute of limitations, are the statute of limitations going to be the same as MedMal, as you indicated? And is that something that comes into play a lot? I know you're all over the country.
It does. Well, we'll only talk about Florida. The statute of limitations in Florida for dental malpractice is the same as medical. It's 2 years from the date you knew or should have known about the possibility of negligence. There's also what's called a statute of repose, which means that you can't file an action for something that happens more than 4 years ago. So you sort of have to find that window between that. It can't be more than 2 years from the date of, let's say, discovery, but it can't be more than 4 years from the date of incident. And that comes into play a lot, especially in the dental malpractice cases, because if I give you an example, somebody goes in and gets an implant fitted. That implant, when it's placed in, goes down into the inferior alveolar nerve. When that happens, the person will lose sensation. They'll get a numb lip and tongue, or lip and chin, I should say.
Right.
And so they go back to their dentist, and their dentist will now then tell them, don't worry, it's temporary. It's going to take about 12 to 18 months for that to recover. So just hang in there, and you'll be okay. Well, that dentist may be lulling that person into a false sense of security that they're going to believe that they're going to recover. You now fast forward 24 months down the road or 25 months down the road, and the patient is exacerbated. They call me up, and I say, well, when did this all occur? And they give me a date that's more than 2 years ago, and I tell them, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you. It's that harsh.
You know, we got to take a quick break, and we're speaking with Mark Glassman, a fine attorney who focuses practice on personal injury, and part of his practice has to do about medical malpractice. And one thing I want to let you know before the show here is I send out thousands of opt-in emails. And I have to tell you, that's one of the best responses I've received. Seems like everybody wants to hear this because they've had bad experiences at dentists as well. You're listening to Legal News and Review, and coming back, we're going to be with, of course, Mike Santucci as well, and we're going to be speaking more about dental malpractice and what rights you have and how to protect yourself, especially if the dentist doesn't have malpractice insurance. We'll be right back.